Well, welcome to my talk in such a sleepy afternoon. Today I'm going to talk about how to build a routing protocol in large-scale sensor networks to achieve both small state and small stretch. And this is joint work with Feng Wang, Lili Chu, and Simon Lam from UT Austin and Johnson Smith from UPenn. Okay, so As wireless sensor networks get more and more popular, we see increasingly demand for complicated applications that build on like in-network processing or in-network storage. And these complicated functionalities typically call for inter-node communication. That is, we need a protocol for point-to-point routing inside wireless sensor networks. Well, there are many challenges, obviously, for such a sensor networks. Like the resources are really, really limited. You have very small amount of memory size, and the data transfer rate is low, which challenges the scalability. And we all know that wireless network is not perfect. There's packet loss, collision, channel contention, and so on. So that's posed the challenges for efficiency and resilience. So, but if we step back, and there are many, many like routing protocols for wireless networks, and there's a central core theme about a trade-off that is between the state and the stretch. Well, this, what's the state? State is the routing table size that describes the network topology, and the stretch is defined by the path lengths found by the routing algorithm over the optimal path length. So the best you can do is get a stretch one. We can obviously see a big tension in this picture, as usual. So the elephants say, we want a small state. You know, that's essentially how you get the protocol scale into large networks. But the donkeys say, no. You know, we want a small stretch, and that's effectively how you get an efficient protocol. But if you think about it, they are really correlated, because if you want a smaller stretch, well, you probably want each node to have a little bit more information about the network topology, which leads to a larger amount of state. So let's take a look at the design space and of the literatures in the past. So in the axis here, we have the stretch from small to large, about average or worst case, if you will. And y-axis here is the amount of state from small to large. And so obviously, the best place to be is this corner. Unfortunately, it is not possible. There are theoreticians has already proved that if you only have a constant amount of state per node, then there's no way you can achieve a constant bound for your routing stretch. So in the literature, people start from the shortest path routing, which is basically built upon distance vectors or link state. So it works really well, and it's really efficient when the network size is small. Okay, but the problem is that the size of the state is linear towards the size of the network. So when you have a large network, it doesn't scale very well. Okay, then people start to push the design space downwards and got this hierarchical routing idea. So basically, you divide the entire region into subregions, and you aggregate the network address space to save some state. But in terms of that, you sacrifice some of the performance. Because the sensor networks is so small, it's probably still, we probably still want a smaller state. So here we come to an extreme, and that is geographic routing. The idea is that the only state you store are your neighbor's geographic coordinates. Okay, so that's a very small amount. And when you do routing, you greedily forward to the neighbor that's closest to the destination in terms of the geographic distance. However, the stretch tends to get large or even larger than previous approaches when the greedy forwarding fails and you have to use some really complicated algorithms to fix to drag you out from the local minimum, okay? And then people realize that we not only need to focus on the state, we also need some smaller stretch. Okay, then we have this virtual coordinates idea. So instead of using the geographic coordinates, people build virtual coordinates which are inferred from the network connectivity. So the performance tend to be better. However, you really need a little bit more space to infer those states. So the question is, what's the ideal place for these two animals to get along with? And can we achieve even smaller state with the same amount of, can we achieve the smaller stretch with the same amount of state? And we believe the answer is yes. So these are our design principles. And the first rule is we really want a small stretch. That's essentially how you can efficient use the wireless resources. We know there's Moore's law and everything is growing really fast, but that's not going to help you to get a much larger network wireless capacity. And so in particular, we want to have a constant bound for the worst case routing stretch. And of course, we want a near optimal for average cases. In addition to that, we also want a small state. If you look at the trend of the sensor networks, their memory size goes from 0.5 kilobyte all the way to 64 kilobytes. I mean, the memory size, it is increasing, but it's still limited. We still can't afford O(n) bound for storing all the states. Therefore, we propose to have a bound as O square root n, and this also has the benefit that we can limit the amount of control traffic to maintain those states, which is also very important. Okay, the last goal for us for our routing protocol is that we want the protocol to be practical. Of course, we want it to be resilient against the node failures and link failures, and we don't want to assume any models for those wireless radios. We don't assume GPS installed on every node or there's pre-configured physical locations. Okay, so how do we achieve that? Well, we build this S4 routing protocol based on this notion of a compact routing, which is derived from the theory community. It's really a set of the algorithms. And what we are really interested in is the TZ scheme, which provides two very nice properties. So the first one is it has a worst case routing stretch. That's 3. It's a constant. And secondly, the state per node is very nicely bound by O square root n. And in fact, they theoretically can prove that if you maintain any state smaller than this bound, you're not going to get any routing stretch guarantee for a constant. So this algorithm works as follows. Okay, so first we divide all the nodes into two categories, beacon nodes and regular nodes. We have a square root n beacon nodes, they're randomly chosen, and the rest of the nodes are just regular nodes, and they should know how to route to the beacons. And then we create this node clusters. So for each regular node D, it has a cluster. Inside the cluster, every node should know how to route to D. The size of the cluster or the radius is decided by the distance to D's closest beacon. Note that this is quite different from the hierarchical routing, because here we have, for every regular node, we have a cluster and they're overlapping with each other. But in hierarchical routing, usually you have non-disjoint regions. And if you have a node sit right on the boundary of a region and you want to route it to another node that's very close to you, but in the other region, you probably need to go through a very large detour to get there. But that's not the problem in S4. Okay, so I'm going to give you a very simple example to show how this thing works. We have a destination node, this blue one down here, and we have 3 beacon nodes. So this node knows how to route to all the beacons, it can find the closest one, this beacon one here, and realize that the radius is 2 hops. Okay, so we create this cluster and let every node inside this cluster know how to route to the destination. Now, when you have a source node up there, the routing rules are the following. So if you are outside the cluster, you just route towards the closest beacon. Okay, so it's like this and this. So when you are inside the cluster, you don't have to go through the beacon anymore because you already knows how to route to the destination. So you just take the shortest path. So it's very easy to see that if you have a source node inside the cluster, you get the perfect routing stretch. But if you, we can prove very easily that if you are outside, you can get a stretch bound by 3. So this is very nice, but it's only half the story, because this is only an algorithm. It's not a protocol. Nobody can implement based on this. So there are several design challenges for this protocol. First of all, how do we maintain and distribute those routing states inside a cluster? If we let every node just do a blind flooding, it's going to be very expensive. And second of all, how do we maintain routing state for beacon nodes? Well, usually you can do broadcast of those beacon packets, but broadcasting tends to be very unreliable. And this is especially important for us because we use the distance from a node to its closest beacon to decide the radius for this cluster. So if it's not accurate, you probably have to send more control traffic than you should have. So that's another issue. The third one is how do we provide resilience against node or link failures? We know that there's usually bursty loss happens inside the wireless sensor networks, and the node could be subject to failure. And sometimes during the routing state convergence, you might still want to send out packets. So how do we deal with all these issues? Then we propose 3 key components of S4 to deal with them. The first of them is called a scoped distance vector to distribute the routing state inside the clusters. So it's actually a very simple idea. So in addition to the distance vector protocol, you have a radius or scope attached right here. So as long as the distance vector, packet goes outside the scope, you just drop the packet. And because now we're dealing with distance vector, we can support incrementally update. And because we have this scope out there, there's no count to infinity problem as typically those distance vector routing protocols have. Secondly, how about inter-cluster routing? Well, we propose this resilience beacon distance vector. So the idea is that after you send out a broadcast packet for a beacon packet, you still passively listen to the medium about the further broadcasts of your neighbors. So if you're overhearing 2 field broadcasts within a certain time, you are reasonably sure that this packet probably get lost somewhere and didn't hear by some of the neighbors, so you want to rebroadcast it up to some certain threshold. And finally, we propose this failure handling technique. It's called a distance-guided local failure recovery. Let me show you how it works inside this example. So here we have a small network, and the source node is number 1, and destination is number 6. The next hop is supposed to be number 5. However, for some reason, we can't reach there. So what do we do? Well, the first thing is to send a broadcast packet. The node number 1 asks for help from its neighbors. And then for all the neighbors, they send out the reply packets based on the distance to the destination. So basically, the node that's closer to the destination should reply earlier. And this, you can really easily calculate this priority based on the scope, the distance vector, and the RBDV. So in our case, node number 2 is the closest one. So it sent out the reply packet here. Node number 3, it hasn't sent out the reply packet yet, but it can overhear the packet from node number 2. So instead of sending back another reply packet, it just suppressed this one because node number 3 knows that number 2 is a better choice. So in that case, we save some control traffic overhead. So after that, node number 4 sent out the reply to number 1, then node 1 choose the closest one, which is number 2 in this case, as the next hop and to do the forwarding. Okay, so there are certainly other design issues that we haven't talked about. For example, for some applications, we sort of need a location directory. Well, because when we route a packet, we not only need the node ID, we also need with the closest beacon ID of that destination. So, and of course, how do we maintain beacon nodes? That's another problem. And in the sensor networks, you definitely want to keep an eye on your link quality, and based on that, to select your neighbors. So the details are discussed in the paper. Unfortunately, I don't have time to talk about them. So in terms of evaluation, we did a very complete evaluation based on three levels. So the first one is a very high-level simulation. So the radios are very ideal. You know, there's no loss, no contention, and the communication range is exactly a circle. And at the second level, we use this TOSIM packet level simulator. We can simulate both lossless and lossy links with contention. One thing to note that, because to use TOSIM, we can actually use the same code as we do in the testbed. So that's a good thing. And thirdly, we further deploy the protocol in the MiCA2 testbed and to further evaluate our protocol in the real environment. So to compare with, we use beacon vector routing, BVR, as the benchmark. The BVR is basically a sort of like a virtual coordinate approach. So we build some coordinates based on the network connectivity and beacon information. And it uses greedy forwarding towards the destination. When it fails, it has some mechanism to recovery and fallback and such. So we like this protocol because it has a very similar goal to us, and that is practical. You can use it in practice, and the code is widely available to download for us to compare. So inside the simulation, there are many questions for us to answer. For example, how does S4 really can achieve small stretch? Well, here we're not only interested in routing stretch, we're also interested in the transmission stretch. The transmission stretch is defined by the number of packets that's actually been sent by your routing protocol versus the actual the optimal number of packets that's required to send. So it has to use this metric. It penalizes the need the use of broadcast packets or choosing links with very bad quality. And we're also interested in comparing the average case versus worst case and to see if the worst case guarantee is worthwhile. And secondly, does S4 achieve small state? And how does S4 perform under node failures? How does S4 work in the real testbed? Those are all the questions. And there are many more in the paper. So to start with, this picture shows you the routing and transmission stretch comparison in the TOSIM simulator. So the number of beacons is set to square root n, and we have lossless links here, but we do have packet collision and channel contention simulated. So the x-axis here is the number of node n, and y-axis here are routing stretch and the transmission stretch. As you can see, the blue curve is S4, and it has a smaller average stretch and even smaller variation compared to BVR. If you look at the number, it's really close to 1.05 or 1.1, close to optimal, which is 1. So this is the same experiment, except that we study the routing state per node. So the y-axis here is the routing state in terms of byte. So we distinguish the state on both beacon nodes and non-beacon nodes, as you can see here. And the S4, the first thing we notice is that the running state of S4 increases at the scale of all square root n. That's exactly what we want. And if you compare the beacon information and the non-beacon state, they're pretty much the same. So they're evenly distributed. That's also what we want. And the S4 state is a little bit smaller than BVR has. So this picture shows you the transmission stretch comparison under irregular topology. So inside the simulator, instead of just randomly put them in a white space, we put some walls as obstacles inside inside the space. So the axis here is the number of obstacles, and the y-axis is the 95th percentile transmission stretch, which basically is very close to the worst case of your routing stretch. Okay, but if you look at the worst case transmission stretch, S4 is not affected by either the number of obstacles or the length of the obstacles. But BVR, in this case, it has a larger transmission stretch when there's more obstacles or the obstacles gets longer here. So and this is also a simulation in TALSIM. We want to see how the algorithm works when there's failures inside the network. So we simulate two kinds of failures. One is non-beacon failures, and the other one is beacon failures. We didn't notice much difference here. So the blue curve is S4 without the failure recovery component, and the red one is with failure recovery component. We can easily see a big jump in terms of a success rate when we use this failure recovery. Okay, so much for the simulation. So I'm going to show you some result about the testbed evaluation. So we build a testbed in UT Austin that consists of 42 MICA2 modes. They operate on 915 megahertz radios so that it's not interfered with the department Wi-Fi networks. We have 11 of them. We call them gateway modes. They are connected to the Ethernet boards, and they're powered by the adapters. And we have another 31 of them that are powered by the batteries and just randomly positioned in the building. To get a reasonably interesting topology, we reduced the default power level to create a multi-hop topology. So the criteria to select a link in here is that we think the link between two nodes exists if the packet delivery rate on both directions, you know, are above 30%. So just want to give you a basic idea of what the environment looks like. And this is the ACES building in the fifth floor at UC Austin. So these dots are the modes, and these are basically office space with walls, you know, as obstacles, and you know, there are grad students walking around from 0 to 30 students, I believe, given on how close the paper deadlines are. So the point is that this is a real environment, and there are some unpredictable obstacles. And so let's see how our algorithm works here. So we use six random beacon nodes, okay? And the source is randomly chosen from all nodes, and the destinations are chosen from those 11 gateway nodes in order to make a better log. So we check the success rate. It's very close to 100, no matter how many packets you send per second. And here, this picture shows you the resilience of the routing protocol. So basically, what happens is that after every 1 minute, I walk around and just randomly pick a mode and just turn it off. So x-axis here is the time, and this y-axis here is the routing success rate. As you can see, the success rate is quite close to 100% after, you know, 30 minutes have passed. So basically, after 30 minutes, 20 modes, or half of the modes, are already dead, and one of them is a beacon, but that doesn't affect our routing protocol. Only after the network is partitioned, we can see some drops of success rate, and that's inevitable. So this experiment shows that this protocol is very practical to use in the real world. Well, to summarize, we have proposed this S4 routing protocol, and it has three key properties that we really like. The first one is that the average routing stretch is very close to 1, which is optimal, and the worst case routing stretch is bound by 3, and the state per node is used is on the order of square root n, so that makes it essentially scalable. And then we propose three key components. There's scope, the distance vector, and resilience beacon distance vector, and distance-guided local failure recovery to realize this cool idea. And then we did extensive simulations and evaluations and showed that it's scalable, efficient, and resilient. So certainly there are some limitations about this work, and I think that will make very interesting future works down the road. First of all, how about make the protocol ETX aware? Because right now the metrics we're optimizing is the number of hops. Although we do take account of the packet loss rate when we check the link quality and prune out the bad neighbors, but that's still like a binary decision. It will be interesting to see when we change the optimization target from hops to ETX, what would happen to the protocol. And also, what would happen if those sensors are moving really fast around, and how do the protocol react on this rapid mobility, and how do we improve the protocol? And that's basically it. And if you are interested in the code or the paper, there's a link you can go to download. Thank you very much.
Hi, Matt Welsh at Harvard. So this is very cool. Love seeing the theory taken into practice and real implementation, real testbed. Thumbs up. What you didn't mention in the talk, and maybe this is in the paper, is how much the complexity of your code, how much memory does that consume? Because you're saving 200 bytes on the state, but if you're using more than 200 bytes for the actual complexity of your protocol implementation, and that is fundamental here, right? So, and this is a much more complex protocol than, say, taking the original GPSR code or something simple. So I would love to know, have you looked at the code size and the RAM and the ROM usage compared to a simpler protocol?
Well, if you compare S4 against BVR, I can assure you they're on the same level of complexity. I'm not sure about GPSR as far as you're concerned, but if you look at the protocol specification for the later version of that, is a CLDP, which is cross-link remover protocol, is actually much more complicated than an S4 protocol. So actually one of the design goals is to have a simple protocol, too easy to implement. That's essentially what we want.
Okay, but did you publish RAM usage numbers in the paper or just routing protocol state? It'd be good to look at that.
Yeah, well, and actually when we upload the protocol, the program to the wireless node, we use this deluge, which is actually very memory intensive, but we managed to fit into it quite easily, and there's still many space left to use.
Hopefully enough space for application code too.
All right.
Phil Levis, Stanford University. So big O square root of N is great, but at 10 kilobytes, constant factors do matter. So
I'm sorry?
At 10 kilobytes, constant factors can matter for the big O. So do you have any thoughts as to maybe there's a more intelligent way you can place the beacons than just randomly, which would help you put sort of a bound on what the constant factor is there?
Yes, certainly. But I think there's a trade-off here. So do you want a protocol to be simple enough to be widely deployable, or you want to tune it as much as possible, to achieve the best of performance and versus the state? So if you're given a topology, you certainly can have a very nice algorithm to figure out what's the best places to place those beacons, right? And that's definitely a way to take this into future work. But that also adds the complexity to your code, and because you need to select the beacons and what if they fail and things of that.
I guess it might be very complicated, but it might also be there might be a very simple way to do it, and that would be an interesting trade-off to look at.
Yeah. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Ben Greenstein from Intel Research. I have a quick question about the complexity. I'm just wondering, have you thought about any real applications that might warrant 4,000 nodes or a number of nodes where O of N would make it intractable to run?
So are you questioning, do we have a real application for sensor networks for 4,000 nodes, or is that the question?
Or even an envisioned application.
Well, I think at a certain age, we don't have it, but it's foreseeable in the future that it's very likely to have a larger size of the network to monitor the environment and I think it is possible. And if you're wondering why do we need a point-to-point routing protocol, that's another issue. But So to have a point-to-point, there are actually many applications that start to use these point-to-point routing protocols, and like do a joined inside the network for two random two tables and multi-dimensional query and things like that. So I think in the future we can definitely see larger size of applications.
Thanks.
Thank you.